You're tuned in to the Kojo Namdi Show, and I'm Jen Gulbeck, sitting in for Kojo. Later in the broadcast, we'll explore what infrastructure projects could actually alleviate the region's traffic problems. But first, local D.C. lost a legend this weekend. Jim Vance, a television anchor for NBC4, who brought news into the homes of Washingtonians for nearly half a century, died on Saturday. He was 75. In a city where so much has changed over the past few decades, Vance was one of the few constants, a familiar face and voice that remained on the air every night, night after night. He was also a trailblazer, an African-American anchor who broke down barriers when there were few faces like his delivering the news to a majority African-American city. So today, we're going to reflect on the life and legacy of Jim Vance, going back all the way to the days that local Washington TV sounded like this.
News 4 Washington presents a special Decision 72 report. Now here is Jim Vance.
Good afternoon. The turnout here in the Washington area for today's election is unexpectedly quite heavy. The major drawing card, of course, is the presidential contest. Here in the District of Columbia, there is only one other issue, and that's the D.C. delegate race. Walter Fauntroy is expected to win that easily. In Maryland's 4th Congressional District, it's a toss-up between Marjorie Holt and Werner Fornos. Incumbent Larry Hogan is expected to win handily in the 5th District. Goodloe Byron is expected to make a good showing in the 6th. And in Maryland's 8th District, incumbent Gilbert Goody shouldn't have much of a problem with Joseph.
In a few minutes, we'll hear from others about what Jim Vance meant to local Washington. But first, his longtime on-air partner at NBC4 and one of his longtime colleagues. We have both Tom Sherwood, a WAMU 88.5 resident political analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4, where he worked for more than 25 years with Jim Vance, and he's a columnist for the current newspapers. It's good to have you, Tom.
Good afternoon.
And as promised, his longtime partner, Doreen Genser, an anchor at NBC4, is joining us on the phone. Doreen, it's good to have you.
Thank you. Hi, Jennifer. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You were on the air this weekend delivering the news to your viewers. For local Washingtonians, you and Jim Vance were a part of their lives that lasted across 5 presidents that carried over from the 80s all the way through up to today. What did that relationship mean to you?
I've been a little overwhelmed watching some of the old clips and looking at comments and things on social media. The relationship meant everything to me. He and I had a pretty special partnership that we both really appreciated. We were very different people with completely different interests and different generations of almost and. But he and I shared a lot of the same values, and we had a tremendous respect for each other, both professionally and also personally. It is a relationship that has 28 years we worked together, and our families knew each other, and so really one of the most significant relationships I will ever have.
Doreen, thank you, first of all, for coming on today. I know this has been a tough time for you. I think you should tell people a little bit about Vance sitting on the set. Now, for those of us who got to stand in the studio and sit there and see it, that when you and Vance would look at each other, when one of you flubbed something on the air, when you misread the teleprompter, you would laugh at each other, quietly, of course. But you guys had a chemistry that started right out of the box in 1989, when you got there in the summer and I got there in the fall of that year. You guys were playful when it was good to be playful. You weren't phony on the air with your laughter. When Jim Vance laughed, the whole show broke down because right. He laughed genuinely and not because it said laugh in the script.
Well, that, you know, people have been talking about that that aspect of Jim Vance, and that is probably one of the greatest gifts that he leaves behind. His authenticity came through in everything that he did. And Tom, you know and so many others know, television news can be kind of a nutty business sometimes. They hire consultants, they do market research, and one month they tell you, we want you to do more of this, and the next month it's no, stop doing that and do this other thing more. There's a lot of that, and Vance resisted all of that, and he stayed true to himself, and he made it possible for the rest of us to be our authentic selves. You know, if Vance could get away with it, so could we.
You know, he drove the teleprompter operator crazy because, you know, he would just start talking, and the teleprompter didn't know what to do with the words on the screen. But can you just briefly, can you tell us, now you lived through one of the greatest moments in television with George Michael, Bob Ryan, and Arch Campbell.
Yeah.
And Jim Vance had to go on the air and report the death of his friend George Michael.
Yeah.
And you've had to do that with Jim Vance on Saturday and going forward today and all the remembrances of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a special thing when you can, when you meld on the air to such a good group.
It is. It is a special thing, and we did have quite a special team. And I look back at some of those clips where we are. It's true that we all had a lot of fun together, and that was about working with people who were very professional and very good at their jobs, and confident enough to with themselves and their teammates to have some fun when it was. You know, we covered a lot of serious stuff, as you know. But when there was an opportunity to have a little fun, everybody in that group was game for it, and everybody we did take a great deal of delight in cracking somebody up, making somebody lose it.
One more thing, and I'll let somebody else speak. But that people wouldn't know this, but you know, high powered, high celebrity, important anchors. You guys sat in the newsroom like the desk assistants and the reporters and the producers, mm-hmm. and different. You sat in the newsroom right across from him each day, and,
mm-hmm.
and got caught up on what the news would be for the 6 o'clock show.
Mm-hmm.
That's something special too, because you saw him interact with young people in the newsroom, whether they were the desk assistant producers,
or
Matt Glassman, who virtually has grown up at Channel 4, is now the assistant news director. He interacted with everybody.
And as you know, Tom, every new person who came into that newsroom would seek Vance out. I watched it happen year after year after year, and we joked about it. I would say, you know, how come all these people aren't coming to talk to me, Vance? They all come to talk to you. And he made time to mentor all kinds of people who came into our building, and you know, he would go not just talk to them and answer questions and offer advice, but he would look at their video reels, you know, and advise them on how to, and that's really time consuming, and he made that kind of time for hundreds of people in the time that I worked with him, and that's so there's a huge legacy there of all of the young up and coming journalists that he helped. I also want to say, for me, looking back on just how news moves really fast, and we don't always get the chance to stop and reflect, and I have been reflecting on the things that I experienced, that I have experienced sitting next to Jim Vance on that news set. You know, the night that Barack Obama was elected president, I got to sit next to Vance, and you know, he never thought that he would see a black man elected president in his life, and imagine what that was like, what that experience was like for me to be not only seeing that history unfold, but to experience it through his eyes. You know, 8 years after that, we were together when the first woman was nominated to run for president. And, you know, I think we did realize the significance of those moments when they were happening, but I'm just kind of overwhelmed when I look back on that. Another story that has come up in my mind, we were working together the night that Mayor Barry was arrested, and And then in the days that followed, Vance was, you know, we were covering the biggest story in the country, and there were a lot of eyes on us and how we did our jobs. And Vance was in the newsroom, and he looks up from the phone call and says, "That's Marion on the phone. He wants me to come over." And you know, you cannot imagine the angst and the drama. The manager is sort of swirling all around because Marion Barry's house was surrounded by media from all over the world. And you know, was Vance going to walk into the middle of that? And I'm sitting there thinking, I'd been there like 6 months at that point, and I'm sitting there thinking, you know, he is crazy to go do that. And that just wasn't even a factor for him. He looked all those managers in the eye and said, "I got to go," because, you know, that was his friend, and he was going to be there to offer him advice in a time of crisis. And that tells you really all you need to know about Jim Vance.
Well, Doreen and Tom, you both were talking about Jim Vance's laugh. We have a little clip we'd like to drop in.
Oh, good.
Hold on.
You want to try?
You want me to pay for it?
Oh, you're a dog. Oh, he lives to do that.
That's Jim Vance losing it with George Michael and Susan Kidd at a famous video of a model tripping a couple times going down the runway, which you can pull up on YouTube. Doreen, that's a last little gift from us to you. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your memories of Jim Vance.
Sure, I'm happy to do it, and I just want to let you know how much all of us at the station really appreciate all the support and love that people are sending our way. It means a lot to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You'll hear more of that coming up, because we're now going to bring in Richard Prince, the editor of Journalisms, a column about media diversity that appears on journal-isms.com and theroot.com. Richard, it's good to have you here.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And you can also join the conversation. Were you a longtime Jim Vance viewer? How would you describe the impact he had on life in Washington? You can give us a call at 1-800-433-8850. You can send an email to kojo@wamu.org or send us a tweet to @kojo. Show. So both of you are coming up on the first break, but I want to get, you know, some questions into you before we go to that. There's a few people associated with local DC, but Jim Vance is probably the one that we think of most strongly. I've been here for 16 years, and, you know, I instantly know who that is. He's the guy who's in there bringing me the news at night. He meant something to communities in every neighborhood of the district and in the entire region. So how would you describe the relationship between Jim Vance and the city that watched him on television for so long?
Oh, my goodness. That's a good one. Well, I if, with your permission, I've got a. I asked Bill Alexander, who worked with Jim in the very beginning of his arrival in D.C. He arrived in 1969, and I was here, I think, a year before, to write me a little something about that, just that very point. And I put it on my website, and I'll read a bit of it right now. Nobody hit this market like Vance. Before him, other personalities were liked and adored, but riding in on the passions of the civil rights movement, he assumed primetime anchor in 1970 after being reporter and morning anchor, and started the Vance phenomenon of fierce city loyalty. African Americans embraced him because of his extraordinarily tough editorials that no one does anymore anywhere, defending and fighting for policies and programs and positions that bettered the lives of the city's majority population. And he was the airwaves' most vocal exponent of the wonders and glories of black culture, especially jazz. Jim also loved opera and the classics. His knowledge of sports and appreciator of black women endeared him in barbershops and beauty parlors. He was a man's man who was at ease in boardrooms or on street corners. Whites liked him because they saw that he was a fair man and a gentleman. He had an easy rapport with whites that bore no trace of emulation. His afro and suits and bright colors identified him as a hip, cool black man who at times knew what was going on but respected who you were if you respected him. He was an original.
Well, I'm going to leave it at that. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll come back and get both of your feedback. Okay. Stay tuned, and if you have anything you want to share about Jim Vance, get in touch with us. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picou and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
I'm Jen Gulbeck, sitting in for Kojo, and this time we're remembering Jim Vance. I'm joined by Tom Sherwood, WAMU 88.5's resident political analyst, and Richard Prince, editor of Journalisms. We'd like to hear from you as well. You can join us by calling 1-800-433-8850. Do you have a favorite memory of Jim Vance? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. So in a region where so many things can divide communities, Jim Vance was one of the few things that brought together new and old residents, people across race and class. How, in your view, was he able to do that? And Richard, the segment that you just read kind of touches on that.
Right. Well, he was able to do that just the way, well, let me say this. I want to go back to when he first came to D.C. and what D.C. was like then. We had just come out of the riots.
1968.
He covered the riots.
Right. Yeah. Right. He came in 69.
Right.
So he was after the riots. The riots took place in 68. We got our first taste of self-government in 67 with the appointed mayor and city council. Before that, we were governed by people on the Hill. The city was changing. Race was in the air. After the riots, the television stations and the newspapers and the media all realized they needed to get some black folks in there because they couldn't go out and cover the riots effectively, or the new city government, or just the way the whole city was changing. So Vance was a product of all of that. And people related to him. And that was to him, to Max Robinson, Fred Thomas over at Channel 7. And remember now that in 1965, just 3 years earlier, when Max Robinson was in Richmond, Virginia, he couldn't show his face on the air because they were afraid that that would turn off white viewers.
Wow.
So that's the way things were. So Jim comes into all this. He was very elated when he was allowed to just be himself, and being himself endeared him to people both white and black and of other ethnicities. And being yourself, being authentic, as Doreen mentioned, gave credibility to not only to himself but to the news product he was producing, and to the station, and it brought in ratings. And so it all worked out. They all fed off each other.
And you didn't mention Maureen Bunyan, but
Well, she wasn't there at that time.
She came fairly soon.
Right, and Mary Maureen, and also J.C. Hayward.
Right, it was a significant change in the recognition from the TV industry that it needed to reflect the community that it allegedly said it served. And I think that was important. And you were talking about respect. I talked to Eric Holder, former Attorney General and former U.S. Attorney here, and first African-American Attorney General. We went over to his house on Saturday. He said, and he lived right near Vance. And so we all called him Vance. We're not being disrespectful. Nobody called him Jim. And he said, and they talked a lot, but he said that the nice thing about Jim Vance was that he got a lot of respect from the communities of people, even if they disagreed politically with some of the things he would say in his commentaries, because Vance gave the respect back. He could talk about the troubles of raising children, all types of things. He had strong views, and he didn't hide them. I remember it was all a big deal when he started wearing an earring in his left ear or something. I was just like, what the hell is he doing? It was just extraordinary. And he had strong feelings. He did not hide that. The famous 1968 Olympic picture of the two Olympians, Tommy Smith and John Carlos, raising their fists in anger and respect for the country, but concerns about the 1968 situation in America. They were in Mexico City. And he had that photograph over his desk. And he could bridge all of what was happening, the nice things about, you know, if you just had a baby or whether there's world turmoil. He was able able to do it because he was true to himself.
So we have a couple comments that came in. We got this on our Facebook page from Ricky. I was born in D.C., and I can't remember a time when Jim wasn't on TV. We also got a tweet from Chef Nate Leonard that says, Vance was like a comforting, reassuring father who loved us all equally, which I think is a really
and fussed
nice
at us.
Yeah. Jim had very strong feelings about what it meant to be part of this region and of this city in particular. A few years ago, in an appearance as a guest analyst on the Politics Hour, a caller asked him about why he gets sensitive when he travels to other parts of the country and people badmouth D.C.'s political culture as incompetent or corrupt. Let's hear how Jim Vance reacted.
There are absolutely marvelous and wonderful things going on in Washington, D.C. Why is it then, therefore, that the city has to suffer under this odor now of scandal when there is so much positive going on the other side? I take it personally because I live here. I identify myself with Washington, D.C., and I want people to recognize that I am proud for good reason.
That's Jim Vance talking over the caller.
Right, and I would share with him, you know, I would say people would, somehow there was this disparaging of the city. People conflate, I believe, the White House and the Congress and the national politics and all of that and the hate and the disgust of that with the 680,000 citizens here. And I always say, you know, four governors of Illinois have gone to jail, but they still have the same voting rights that we're still trying to get as residents of the district.
When I go home to Illinois, I hear people bad-mouthing D.C. all the time, and they don't understand why I don't laugh at their jokes anymore.
They don't really quite understand that this is a real community here. But Vance knew the community because he was part of it. You know, we've got to mention the Ben's Chili Bowl and the changing demographics of this city. You know, back in the late 60s and 70s when Vance came to town, this city was 70-plus percent African-American. And the Census Bureau statistics now have it below 50%. It's like 49% are dropping because of the influx of young people and millennials into the city and the cost of it and all of that, the gentrification. These are all important, serious social issues that we have to deal with. And it's just really, I'm sorry to say that Vance won't be here to help us solve them.
Let's take a call now. Let's go to Lawrence in Washington, D.C. Lawrence, go ahead.
Hi. I just want to tell this one story. I was in student government at McKinley Tech, and there was this event that Jim Vance came and a few deans from some of the local universities were there. And, I was trying to make people feel comfortable until until the principal showed up. Anyway, I was nervous, and Jim Vance saw that, and he walked over to me, and he threw his hands around my shoulders and said, okay, you know, you look like you're nervous, but I don't want you to be nervous. You know, you're doing a fine job. We're people too. So just be yourself. Everything's going to be okay. And I remembered that. And, you know, especially as a kid, he didn't have to do that. But the fact that he took the time out to do that, it really meant a lot to me. And it really shaped, I hope, the way I treat people. And, you know, I just feel like it's the end of an era.
Lawrence, thanks very much for your call. On a similar note, I'd like to take a call from Mike in Alexandria. Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I attended a town meeting at the studios at WIC about 16 years ago. And Jim was the highlight of the event. And I appreciate all the praise that he's getting today. He rightfully deserves all the acclamation. And when I made some comments to him, he was willing to listen. He's a real gentleman and a kind person. I made concerns about the TV and movie violence that's so adversely affecting our population. And he concurred with my comments.
And that's a lot of what we're hearing about Jim Vance, is that he's thoughtful, he's willing to engage with everyone, he's compassionate.
Very much like people would say, whether you like Bill Clinton as president or not, when you talk to Bill Clinton, you were the only person in the room. He looked at you and listened and wasn't fake. He could do it. And Jim Vance was the same way. The person mentioned McKinley Tech. Vance has been to any number of high school graduations. I hear it from people all the time. Vance came to this. Vance came to that. He was a big supporter of the Theater Lab, a group in town that I support. And he was able to be direct. I might say there's a great picture on Twitter of Vance in pajamas reading Shakespeare at close to midnight when we were doing a fundraiser for Vance. But he was able to do the little things and the big things that make up a real community, not just be a highfalutin anchor who just took the cream off the top of what the big news was. He was down in the streets with people.
A lot of people say they love Jim Vance because they could see the humanity in him. Here's what Kathy Bowerman Gaines wrote to us on Facebook this weekend. He was like a friend on TV sharing the news of the day with warmth and humor. But Jim Vance was also human in the sense that he struggled, and some of those struggles, like those with depression and drug use, were very public. How did the part of who he was affect his relationship with his audience? Richard Prince.
Well, I think it solidified a bond. I mean, we all like to know that we're human, that the people we're watching are human, and they suffer from some of the same issues that we do, and that was certainly the case with Jim, and as it was with Mayor Barry. I think that when they do have the memorial service or whatever for Jim, I think it'll be probably the biggest turnout for a local figure since.
Right. And I think the respect is that he acknowledged, and he gave some, if you ever were in one of the speeches where he talked about his drug use and how that affected his life and how low he felt and sunk before he got control of that. Or if you heard him talking to Doreen a year or so ago now about depression and how he dealt with that, it's just extraordinary. But he had seen a wide swath of life. That's the dark, deep part of him that he didn't like, and he tried to fix it. And that's what he encouraged people to do, that yes, you fall, but you can get up. Always get up.
On the lighter side, we were able to see quite a bit of the person behind that anchor desk over the years. We learned about how he saw the world through his commentaries. On the Politics Hour a few years ago, Kojo Namdi and Tom Sherwood talked about plans he was making at the time to ride his motorcycle across America. Let's take a listen.
Our guest analyst is Jim Vance, NBC4 anchor and Harley Davidson enthusiast. Now I have to say that every time I call Jim.
Are you going to bring that subject up with him? You're like you're prepping him for a question about motorcycles. Are you going to buy one?
No, I'm not.
I recommend that you not.
I am leaving tomorrow morning for Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where I'm going to pick up my bike and riding through Yellowstone and then up to Glacier National Park and then back across the country, but this time all on two-lane highways.
The back roads of America.
The back roads of America.
Wow. How long will you be on your bike?
Are you be tweeting?
It'll be 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 days.
Will you tweet while you're on this trip? You hadn't even thought about it, had
Brooklyn
you?
Bridge.
You had not thought
I don't
about
even
it
know
at all.
How to tweet.
You got to learn how to tweet. You could tweet.
No,
across,
I don't.
You can tweet across America. That would be great. But
I have heard him say
at
this
Jim
on
Vance, right?
Before.
In the, what's your tweet at Jim Vance?
I have no idea. What
yeah, it is. That's what it is. You don't even know what it is. You know, Marion Barry was in here, and he could tweet. He did it right on this show.
Speaking of tweets, you can send us.
Tom, I went and looked, and he never learned to tweet.
No, he didn't like any of that, you know. But I must say that he on his Facebook page, he has this terrific picture of him riding somewhere out west on his motorcycle. And I kind of use it as my signature in for Jim Vance, where I just say, ride on, Jim Vance, ride on. Because he was a great guest. He loved coming on the show. He would even listen. I would go into work sometimes after this show, and he would start talking about it. And we wanted to have him on again, but we just weren't able to do it. He was just terrific.
Richard, last word to you.
Well, I forgot to mention, I was talking about the people who are on television who were around in that when Jim was around, but I also should mention Kojo himself. I mean, we've got another living legend right here.
That's true.
Yeah,
right,
unfortunately not here today,
not here
but
today,
here
but
in spirit.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So when you think about Jim, think about Kojo too.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks to you both, and thanks to everyone who called in and sent us your thoughts and memories of Jim Vance. I've been joined by Tom Sherwood, WAMU 88.5's resident political analyst, and Richard Prince, editor of journalisms at journal-isms.com and theroot.com. Thanks, both of you, very much for joining us.
Great, thank you.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk about a potential bridge across the Potomac. Stay tuned.
The Thanks for listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at WAMU.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.